even clients just coming to me personally, and I'm not sure Hugh or Daniel, if you guys also had this, but being like, I can't look at the news. I can't look at the media right now. Can you just tell me, are you concerned about PSLF going away? Or are you concerned about what tariffs might do to the economy or whatever that issue is that they're having kind of fear stoked by what they're reading, what they're seeing, what people tell them, and just being like, I need to put the blinders on. I can't look at this all the time. But can you, as a professional in this financial world, tell me, are you concerned or should I be concerned?
Welcome to Finance for Physicians, the show where we help physicians like you use money as a tool to live a great life. I'm your host, Daniel Wren, and I've spent the last decade advising physicians on their personal finances with the mission to help them understand that taking control of their finances now means creating a future where they can practice medicine where, when, and how long they want to.
Welcome, guys. I got the whole gang with me today. We have Hugh and Jackie with us.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, really excited to talk today. Normally, always really excited to talk to you, Daniel, but even more excited because we have Jackie with us today.
I know. We haven't had this group for a pod yet, the three of us. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I think we have. I think we'll do great. We got a good crew. So Jackie and Hugh both are excellent, and I think we'll bring a little bit of a different angle too. So we'll see how it shakes out. We're going to be talking about end of year, like 2025 wrap up. I guess this will be coming out in mid or late December 2025. So we're going to be covering, you know, how 2025 panned out, and you'll notice, like, I guess this is not necessarily like 2025 specific. A lot of the things we'll talk about are kind of like recurring themes that seem to happen every year. You know, we'll kind of talk through specifically what has happened in 2025, and then also identify some of those general themes that happen. And then we'll wrap up with some things to think about for 2026, because it'll be here before we know it. Anyway, I thought we could start with some of the, so we have the privilege of working with a bunch of physician families. And, you know, just in that experience, we tend to see these general themes start to emerge that kind of stick out. So I thought that'd be a good starting point is, what are some of the 2025 themes that you guys observed in your practice? Jackie, you want to go first?
Sure. I would say overall throughout this year, the biggest theme that I tended to see with everyone, which really kind of trickled down and permeated to a bunch of sub-themes, was just uncertainty. Felt like there was a lot of uncertainty around what's happening with PSLF potentially, what's happening with people's jobs when there were DOGE cuts, things like tariff, housing costs. To me, it felt like uncertainty was a very common theme for pretty much all of my clients throughout this year. Just a lot of different types of uncertainty that came up.
Yeah, and kind of going along those lines, I'd say the biggest thing that stuck out to me throughout the year, the biggest kind of pain in my rear end, was the SAVE plan and it getting eliminated and what to do with all of the people that were on that plan.
Yeah, that's super stressful, because it's like, especially early on, it's like, well, we don't know what's going to happen. So, and the complete change in direction with student loans. I think that it seems like a lot of it for 2025, at least, tied into the election and politics, actually. That was what I thought was unique about this year, was that a lot of the things I saw with clients, I mean, maybe not directly, but like ultimately tied back to politics and, you know, the fact that there was some big elections and change in leadership. So, for example, the student loans, it was like, well, what's going to happen with student loans? And it's like, well, who's going to get elected? I mean, that was a big part of it. People, I don't know, in my experience, this year is the most anxiety I've ever seen with clients around elections. And so that was kind of a theme I noticed, is like their anxiety translated to their day-to-day the election anxiety and the unknown with who's going to lead the country translated to like, they felt it in their own personal lives, which I've never really seen myself.
I would agree with that. I think some of the political uncertainty did drive some of those other aspects of uncertainty that I mentioned. And like you already brought up, the loan forgiveness. I don't think I'd ever really encountered many clients asking questions about what's going to happen to PSLF prior to this year. Felt like previously that was always a more certain thing in people's minds.
Yeah. A lot of people were worried about that, and rightfully so. I mean, you made career decisions based on that and trying to get that loan forgiveness. Maybe you've stuck around jobs that you're like, well, I'm just going to stick it out until I hit this 10-year mark. And all of a sudden that's in question and you start questioning all of your other decisions and it can really spiral out of control from there, but really just have to get back to focusing on the things you can control and try to tune out all of the other noise.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Well, I was going to ask, do you think the fear was merited?
I think based on if you had that fear, you probably have a good reason for it. I don't think there's much fear that is unreasonable. I think if you experience things that people experience in their lives and something, you know, brings them fear, I think if you experience those same things, you would probably also feel the same way. But that's just my personal opinion.
Yeah. I think those feelings were very valid, especially at certain parts of this year, worrying if PSLF might go away entirely. But then I do think throughout the year, that rhetoric from the political side of things did cool. So I think things got a little bit better. But at one point, kind of like he was saying, with those experiences, I think that was a really valid concern.
Well, I think part of it, so I would say it wasn't merited as much as, and I have a different angle. I think I think it's valid as well, but I think that our culture and media, especially our media, like hypes stuff up so much that it translates to fear for people. And that's what I mean by unmerited. Like, I think that our media system, especially this year, just really like pumped, and the social media, you know, all that stuff just really like amped up all the fear for people, which made it a little bit higher than I think it probably should have been. And that's what I mean by unmerited. I don't know.
The media can definitely stoke the flames, and that's because they get paid when you click on articles. So there's going to be the nasty headlines, but they did specifically target, or at least they tried to, you know, making payments in a medical residency or fellowship not count. So that was like specific, deliberate, taking aim at a certain industry or type of person. So like, I can totally get it from that standpoint. Now that didn't come to fruition, but that was definitely there.
Yeah, that was legit. And that when they were talking about not counting in training payments for student loans, that was a big potential game changer for a lot of people.
That could be catastrophic to a lot of the people that we work with in their plans.
Mm-hmm. Now, so that part of the fear selling in the news was definitely merited, but like 95% of it, like a lot of the other stuff, and I think was just overhyped like crazy. So I'm talking more broadly speaking. So that makes it difficult too, because it's like, we need to pay attention to what's going on, but like, do you need to pay attention to what's going on? Like you can get down a rabbit hole pretty quick. It's like all of a sudden you're on social media following all these economic influencers that are just selling fear, and you know, it's causing more anxiety than is necessary.
Yeah. I think I've even seen that trickle over, going back to the original question of themes that we saw this year, is even clients just coming to me personally, and I'm not sure Hugh or Daniel, if you guys also had this, but being like, I can't look at the news. I can't look at the media right now. Can you just tell me, are you concerned about PSLF going away? Or are you concerned about what tariffs might do to the economy or whatever that issue is that they're having kind of fear stoked by what they're reading, what they're seeing, what people tell them. And just being like, I need to put the blinders on. I can't look at this all the time. But can you, as a professional in this financial world, tell me, are you concerned or should I be concerned? Did you guys let me be as well?
Yeah, let me be your anxiety sponge. I'll soak that up for you.
Professional anxiety sponges here.
I've never actually like thought of it that way, but that's completely true. That's like definitely a value add of our service is being that anxiety sponge, I guess you could call it. Yeah. Like that. Now that I'm thinking about it, like that happens all the time where people are like just saying, should I be worried about this? Should this be a concern? That's almost the norm of how it comes up. Or like, should I be freaked out about XYZ?
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure that people do that to physicians as well in their world where, you know, they'll run like a full panel of blood work or something. And some things might be within the normal range and some things might be a little high or low, but you can hopefully just go to your doctor and be like, are you worried about any of these? Should I worry about any of these? And if they are feeling like it's fine, then hopefully it can take away some of that patient's anxiety as well. And I think sometimes that is the role that we play. You know, you don't need to panic until we're panicked.
Have you ever said yes?
And we don't panic.
Have you ever said yes to that question? Should I be worried about XYZ?
I don't think there was any particular instance I can think of where I was like, oh yeah, you should be worried about this. Hugh, what about for you?
Nothing's really coming to my mind where I'm like, yeah, you should be worried about this. It's more of like, let's wait until things are official and then we will just act on whatever information is official. But until then, let's not change up any of our plans.
Right.
Let's not plan based on what we're speculating could happen. Let's wait until we actually know what's happening.
So like for the save thing you were talking about earlier, like that somebody comes to you, they're like, I'm freaked out about the save thing. Should I really be this freaked out? It's freaking me out. What should I do? It's like, hold on. Like, let's see how it plays out. Like nothing set in stone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jackie.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I was just going to say that those are the hardest ones when you can't solve it by effort in action. It's you have to wait on other people. Mm-hmm. So going back, so with the save plan, the biggest problem was, and how did you get there? Maybe you're somebody who was on revised pay as you earn, which turned into the save plan. And maybe since 2020, you know, you haven't had to update your income and now you're in attending and you don't want to update your income. You want to keep paying like $150 a month. Don't want to change and pay $2,000 a month or whatever it is. So the revised pay as you earn plan turned into save, and then save got blocked. And then the biggest problem was they were not processing changes for people to get off of save until in the last few months. So a lot of people were stuck worrying. Maybe you even, you're like, hey, I was planning to change jobs as soon as I got to this 10-year mark for PSLF, or I was planning on reducing my FTE status. And now, yes, maybe I didn't lose any money because I didn't make payments toward it that don't count, but I had life decisions that I was waiting on this. So that's another big piece of it that bothers people.
Yeah. I think the key point though, I think you mentioned this earlier, Hugh, is like, let's focus on things we can control and act based on the information we have at that point in time, do the best we can, focus on the things you can control. So that was a good example of like, you made the right decisions. Things potentially are changing, but it's completely out of your control. So like, you kind of just have to roll with punches for a little bit. And I think that's the case in a lot of these big, scary, uncertain economic changes or even life changes.
I definitely saw that a lot on my end as well in kind of the investing world for our clients. When we did have that volatility last spring on a lot of the tariff uncertainty discussions, and even throughout the year as those kind of sometimes flash back into the news, we saw a lot of people who were worried about that uncertainty, especially as the market was going down and there was a lot more volatility than we'd seen recently. But I think that often we just have to coach our clients that this is going to happen and we need to control what we can control. And really, we can't do anything about the market going down when there's tariff discussions. But what we can control is not making a poor behavioral decision because of that, not letting fear drive our plans and staying the course. So different side versus the student loan side, but even over on the investing side as well, I think there was a lot of needing to take a pause and not let the emotional things get the best of us when really we can't control a lot of these things.
When was it down? Was that in March or?
Like March to April.
April 2nd was the tariff announcement.
April.
So the S&P went from around 5,670, and then 6 days later, it was under 5,000.
What's that percent?
It's more than 10%, but somewhere around 13. But here we are now, like seven months later, and we're almost sniffing 7,000 on the S&P 500. Yeah.
It has been quite the year to stay the course.
Yes, for sure. Did you all have families inquire or like propose changing the investments at that time, or even go into like cash or more conservative investments? I know.
How about you, Jackie? Would you start there, since you're the investment expert?
So that's what I was going to say, is I did not have any of my own clients in that situation. Many of them expressed their anxieties about
asked about
if they should make a change. But with all of them, I was able to talk them off the ledge and say, we actually don't recommend making any changes. We just need to stay the course here and see how it plays out. But I do know that there were some other people who felt strongly enough to make some potential changes in their investments due to how they felt about it.
Yeah, that's what I mean, is that it usually starts with like, I'm concerned or anxious about this situation, tariffs, market, whatever. And so natural reaction is like, I feel like I need to make a change. Typically that change involves like getting more cautious or safer, like gravitating towards safer because of the uncertainty, which is, I mean, without, I guess, intervention or whatnot from with you, a lot of times that's how people end up making major changes to their investments when the things get a little scary, I guess. And that's a terrible decision. I mean, just to put that into context, what you just said, like it was down 10% and it was scary and people were freaked out about it. Some people were. But then what is it today, Hugh? What'd you say?
When I looked earlier, it was around 6,800. So, I mean, that's like up over 30% since that bottom.
Yeah.
Right.
And even on the year to date right now total, so looking January 1st through today, for example, VTI, since we often use that as an example, is up like 16% on the year, despite having that significant drop in spring.
Let's take a quick break to talk about our firm, Renda Financial Planning. The goal of our podcast is to empower you to make better financial decisions. But sometimes the best financial decision you can make is to work with someone who understands your financial goals and has the expertise to keep you on track to reach them. That's where Ren Financial Planning comes in. We are a full-service financial planning firm that works with over 400 physicians and their families across the country. We charge a transparent monthly flat fee for our services and offer virtual meetings you can take from anywhere. Best of all, you'll get to work with a team that specializes in working with physician families. So whether you're starting out and wondering how you'll balance your student loan payments and saving for a home, or you are an established physician trying to figure out how to pay for your kid's college and how much you need to save to reach financial freedom, we can help. I'll put a link in the show notes to schedule a no-obligation meeting with one of our certified financial planners. Ren Financial Planning, LLC is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit renfinancial.com. That's W-R-E-N-N-E financial.com.
I think I already brought this up. I feel like a lot of the fear gets stirred up by media and the gurus and the big economic voices or influencers in the world or on even social media. And so I thought we could maybe talk about some of their predictions they had for 2025 and then maybe reflect on how well they've done. Because if we're going to look at them as a source, I think it's helpful to look at like how credible the information source is in the first place. So what comes to mind as far as like some of the big predictions that were coming out, or even just like the consensus at the beginning of 2025?
I think we saw a lot of predictions around this time last year for 2025 of potential recession. We had, you know, high interest rates, talk of tariffs, all of that. So I do think that was something that got thrown around in a lot of prediction circles.
Yep. Inflation was another one people were talking, and that was tied to the tariffs mostly, but that inflation, the prediction, a lot of people were predicting that inflation would get, you know, worse than it already was, which it has not happened. That has not happened. There hasn't been a stock market decline. There hasn't been a recession, at least in the traditional sense of how they define it.
I'm not really your guy for predictions. I do not pay attention to those too much, but I think one of the things that I was a little bit surprised about was mortgage rates being slow to drop. I thought those would have come down a little bit quicker. Now there's a lot of different forces at play. Inflation still stubbornly a little bit above the Fed's 2% target. So they haven't dropped their interest rates very much yet. So maybe we'll get to see some opportunities, you know, for refinancing for people that have maybe bought in the last couple of years. But for those people that have bought maybe 5 years ago and you have the 3% rate, I mean, you're not going to have a chance, at least that I could see, you know, for refinancing. But that's been one of the things that I've been watching for clients specifically. So that's why that's definitely on my radar. And just really surprised to see that that hasn't dropped very much at all in the last year or two.
Yeah. I was looking earlier today, the Realtors Association, it's a National Realtors Association, predicted that mortgage rates would be average 6% in 2025, which they have for 30-year mortgage, which they have not been. They've been higher than 6% average. So, I mean, that was definitely the consensus at the beginning of the year. People thought in general that rates would go down for mortgages and stuff like that. And it is not panned out. I mean, there's been a little bit of decrease, but it's still kind of like up and down.
Have you seen if there are any 2026 rate predictions out yet?
I haven't seen any. I haven't looked. My guess is that they're going to be lower as well. I know the predictions for long term are lower. Like the general consensus is reducing rates trend over the next, you know, 5 years or whatever. But I think a theme there or a takeaway there is that the gurus in the media are terrible at the predictions, especially the stock market. That's one of the, if you're curious about it, go look back at like predictions for the stock market. Nobody predicted what it's done this year. And usually they're way off. I mean, they might get like generally, I think the predictions this year were like up a modest amount, like 6% or, you know, several percent. I don't know of anybody that was predicting, you know, 15 to 20% growth in the stock market. And so they're especially bad. And the stock market just notoriously is very difficult or even impossible to predict the shorter period of time you look at. And so a year is just really short in the stock market. Any other big predictions that didn't exactly pan out or big surprises you guys observed from 2025?
I think we covered it.
I think wage growth was one more I was thinking about is there was some, and that has, this is probably more on the individual level. Like I know families I work with, some of them have brought up concern about, I guess, their future compensation as a result of like the changes to reimbursement rates and that sort of thing. I've heard that come up a lot. Now, I know just with the families I work with, it is not panned out, but I know that certain types of physicians are going to be more susceptible to that than others. I think a lot of the physicians I work with are like self-employed, probably more so than normal. And so there's a little bit more insulation from that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I personally did not really see that concern from the families that I work with very much. I can't really think of many people who brought that up as a discussion point throughout the year, but I have heard kind of among others that that was something to be aware of or a potential concern.
Some other questions I wanted to throw out there for you guys. So as we're looking at next year or wrapping up this year, what are some considerations that you guys can think of as far as like last minute considerations for this year to be thinking about? Maybe let's just focus on that first. So like wrapping up 2025, what are some things you guys would throw out as far as actionable things to think about for families that are trying to wrap the year up productively?
Jack, you want to start?
Sure. I guess if this was me in that position, I would first want to look back at this previous year and see if I have maximized any sort of potential tax efficiencies that I want to take advantage of within a calendar year. Did I max out my retirement plans? Is there anything else I'm missing there? Any opportunities or need to do something like tax loss harvest, if that's available, things like that, as well as just kind of take stock of what did I save throughout this year? Did I meet those goals? Did I set any goals for the year? Was I intentional with my plan to try to really think, what could I be changing maybe going forward? Hugh, what about you?
Yeah, I think all those things, there's like contribution limits. And if you have the excess cash, you know, you might want to make sure you're maximizing all the tax advantage accounts. You've already, you know, 529 plans might be one to add there. If, you know, you haven't maybe started saving for your kids' college education and that's bothering you, maybe that's a good year-end thing to just go in and look at what's your state's deductibility limit and just start there. But I think around this time of year in our household, and somewhat driven by my wife, Carrie, is, you know, we're just kind of reflecting back on how fortunate we are and, you know, what are some causes that, you know, we might want to give to, or money we just want to designate to charities and maybe not give it this year. But we have a donor advised fund, and it's about this time of year where we're looking at what investments we have in our joint taxable account that have grown the most and move those over to our donor advised fund to eventually give to charities. And we kind of just talk about, there's not a whole lot of science to it, but just an amount that, you know, we would feel comfortable giving. I think that's a really good thing, really good habit to get into, because physicians, yes, you have a very hard job. You also have a very nice income, and probably through your work, you know, you see some of the challenges that I don't see, right? Because the type of people that I'm working with day to day are probably in the top 10% or higher of earners. So, you know, you might see some of those things and have people in your life maybe even that you want to help out. And I think that's always a really good thing to get into. And I tell you, every time I move the money over to the donor advised fund, I don't feel bad. I actually feel pretty good about myself. So that's a really good thing to think about too.
Yeah. It's a great year-end item.
Yeah, that's one of those things. I think, like, whether it's paying off debt or giving or saving, all three of them, I've never had anybody I work with or felt it myself where they're like regretting or complaining about they're like, I gave too much, or I wish I wouldn't have paid off my mortgage, or wish I wouldn't have saved so much money for my future. People just don't do that. So I think what I heard a lot, I guess the theme I heard emerge there is like the goal, revisiting goals. The easy thing to do, a lot of times people set their goals and then they end up in the gym in January and then like they stop by January 15th or something. So it's like, and then they, by December, they couldn't even tell you what remotely close to what their goals were. And so you're talking about like revisiting your goals and seeing how you're doing. And that's like a big deal. Like to be able to do that is to, that requires having your goals front and center throughout the entire year.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. It shouldn't just be a January or a December exercise to think about goals. That should really be at the forefront of how you kind of conduct yourself all the time, ideally.
Yeah. I know when we work with families, like, for example, Hugh was talking about giving, like, that comes up, we're going to ask about those kinds of things. And when we know that there's a giving goal, it's already like built into all the reports and numbers that we're looking at. Like, it's just incorporated. So then that sets you up to be way more likely to be on track. Well, first of all, it's built in, so it's going to happen, and life gets busy and you forget about things. And then when you do go back to look at it, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, we're on the right direction. And it increases your chances of success. And so when you get to the end of the year, now you're like, well, what about that? Giving is important. So I need to make sure I'm on track, or where do we want to give to? And you've kind of set yourself up to be able to succeed at the goal. And, you know, that ultimately that's what we're after, is to be more in alignment with those. So as we wrap up, last point I wanted to go through is talking about 2026. So if we're starting to look ahead for next year, what sort of suggestions or opportunities or challenges or considerations would you guys throw out as people, you know, as we're wrapping up this year and starting to think about next year? Like, we're not going to talk about predictions. We're just going to talk about
You tried to make me do that last year and give market predictions.
Did I really?
I've learned for this episode not to.
We don't make market predictions.
No, we do not. And I think that's what I said last time. So okay. I won't be doing that. But in terms of considerations for next year, I would probably even just pull this back to the point we were just talking about and start with what your personal goals are. What is it that you're really trying to accomplish with your finances? And how do you prioritize those things? Mm-hmm. Are you most focused on retirement or education or buying a new home next year or whatever that may be? And to me, that kind of drives what our priorities and considerations are. Just having that plan, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for some people, it might be you're just tweaking things a little bit, right? Like new 401k limits. So you're adjusting mm-hmm. it up a little bit. Maybe you graduated training last year, and so you ramped up the percentage to be like super high to try to hit it by the end of the year. Oh, you better adjust that in January or else you're going to max out too early. Maybe you miss out on the match, you know, if you do that. Maybe you were doing Roth because you were in a lower tax bracket. Now you're going to be full year attending income. Now you might want to switch that to pre-tax. There's a lot of different things that could be person dependent. But I think if I had to draw one particular challenge that I could foresee coming, and for some people it might be pushed to 2027, but that finally some people might have to update their income for student loan purposes.
Oh, no.
Might finally be hit with that like $3,000 per month payment. And that can present quite a bit of challenges. So make sure you look and see at least when is your scheduled date to update your income.
Are you saying because you think there's still a small chance that
it's gone on 5 years now. So
are you making a prediction?
Is that a prediction?
time stamp it. Yes.
Yeah.
December 1st, 2025. But that's going to be huge. And it could be the student loans. It could be just another purchase that you're planning to make. But if that's you, know what big fixed payment changes that you're going to have and practice the payment. You can automate it, the money to a savings account, a taxable investment account. I don't care where, somewhere, so that you get used to that payment and you have a place to cut from and you don't end up in credit card debt because you didn't practice it and get used to it and you just pretended like it wasn't going to happen. Yeah. So I feel very strongly about this. We do this with a lot of people that I work with. When you're, let's say you're planning to buy a house, doesn't work that well if you're trying to buy when you're first year out of training. But practice that payment so you know what lifestyle changes you might have to make before you get in that situation and you feel regret.
Yeah, that's such a good strategy, Hugh. And I know clients always appreciate having that suggestion ahead of time as well, whether that is the home purchase or whatever it may be, where maybe we want to not pull the trigger on that right away, wait a year and make sure we can afford what that mortgage and all the other associated costs are going to be without making it feel like we have to pinch every penny or just feel overly strapped in other aspects of life. So that's a really, really great plan for 2026, is to look ahead to those big fixed payment changes, if there are any, and start practicing today.
Yes. Very good. Very good advice. The only other thing I'll throw out is, as you're starting to think about goals for 2026, one of the exercises I like to utilize is, so normally the way it works is like, you ask yourself, or somebody asks you, or you're talking about with your spouse or something, your goals. And it's like, well, what are your goals? And it's like, oh, I want to retire by blah, blah, blah. Or I want to save X number of dollars. Or I want to. So let's just say it's the retirement one. Like, I want to retire. I want to be financially independent in 20 years. That's a common one. So that's a lot of times where people leave it. And then they kind of like, you know, move on. But what I would say a better step is to do like an exercise where you just keep asking why. So you're like, well, why is it important to be financially independent in 20 years? And then that, you always have to be like, it makes you, you got to take a second to think about it. You're like, well, because people retire. It's like, well, what about, why is it important to you? It's like, well, because I want to retire. Well, why do you want to retire? Why is that important? What the reason I bring that up, just an example of this, a lot of times what I've found with physicians, for example, is that sometimes the underlying reasons behind it are not exactly what you're thinking about. So a good example would be like, I want to make more progress towards financial independence or retiring sooner. And that might be great, but like, big difference if that's just like what is a priority to you, versus like sometimes that's driven because your job is burning you out so much that you got to get out. You're like, I'm burning out with my career, so like being able to retire is like my escape. So those are very different paths and would typically be addressed differently. So I think that's a good exercise. Anytime you're thinking about goals, is like peel back the layers of the goals, because there's underlying reasons behind them. And with your spouse, peel back the layers. They're going to have like different reasons or values or goals. Sometimes you're not exactly on the same page, so you kind of got to work through those things. Hopefully I'm not starting any fights or anything, but sometimes that does. My wife and I were driving down to Nashville, and we were talking about this particular issue, and we got into some like fair fights, like some, you know, debates about, because not all the things are good. You know, we weren't on exactly the same page with all the things, but we kind of worked through it and came out on the end with a little bit more compromise. So, all right. Any other closing thoughts before we wrap up? Here's to 2026.
I've got one suggestion. I just finished it. Read or listen to The Art of Spending Money by Morgan Housel.
Oh, yeah.
That's on my list. So I will take that recommendation into the new year.
His other book is also fantastic. If you haven't read it, The Psychology of Money, that's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hugh, would you read The Psychology of Money first?
I don't think you necessarily need to. I think it's approaching it from a different angle.
Yeah.
Whichever one you will start with, if you will read one.
Right. Those are great books. They're just...
Either one's good.
They're about the stuff that's really important in your money. Mm-hmm. Like the psychology of money is, and the behaviors and all that is where it's at. So, all right. Well, thanks guys. It was fun getting together, and we'll look forward to next time.
Thanks, Daniel.
Yep. Thanks. Have a good one.
No guests or clients appearing on the podcast received any form of compensation for their appearance and obtained no other benefit from us. It should not be assumed that every client has had the same experience.